This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Friday, December 20th. Among the headlines today, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, fresh off guiding the House to a historic impeachment vote, is suddenly getting criticism from liberal commentators and political analysts for withholding the articles of impeachment from the Senate. Mostly, they're questioning whether she gets any leverage from it toward getting the Senate to call fact witnesses, and if she risks looking too tactical after arguing that impeachment is beyond politics for the urgency of stopping President Trump from cheating in the 2020 election. But on the other side, the evangelical magazine Christianity Today has now surprised many people by coming out with an editorial calling for Trump to be removed from office. Editor-in-chief Mark Galli calls the president's coercion of Ukraine and harassment of Joe Biden immoral. Our guest on impeachment today is Eliana Johnson, who has been here before as a White House correspondent for Politico and CNN contributor. She recently became editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon, becoming the first female editor-in-chief of a major conservative news organization. Eliana, thanks for coming back on and congratulations on your new gig.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
Would you take a minute first, then, to put yourself in your new context for our listeners who have heard you here as a White House correspondent for Politico and seen you, you know, as more of a fact reporting and analysis in that role? Is your role changing to be more of an advocacy journalist as you see it?
It's not. I would say only the focus of our reporting is more on Democrats, but we're nonetheless, the Free Beacon reports. Some of the stuff we do is satire, but it's all fact reporting, and we really don't run op-eds since I've started. And I think I noticed really when I was at Politico, the president takes up so much oxygen and is the focus of so much reporting right now, and I think rightfully so. But my goal is really, I think, to fill the gaps that in the mainstream media's coverage and go places where the mainstream media isn't going. And there's plenty of room to do that given how much oxygen Trump takes up in mainstream media coverage.
So we'll get to what you have to say covering one particular Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, in a minute. But just to stay on this for a sec, your predecessor as editor, Matthew Continetti, I saw quoted in BuzzFeed saying the Free Beacon's goal has been to find the best conservative journalists who will abide by the canons of journalism, fact-checking, legal review, calling the subjects of your stories for comment. Is that consistent with how you see the Free Beacon in the context of Washington or the conservative media today? Because it kind of implies that maybe some big conservative news organizations aren't so concerned with things like fact-checking.
I think the focus for conservatives has been on opinion. If you look at Fox News, conservatives have really won the wars of opinion on cable television and on talk radio, where I think conservatives haven't maybe focused as much energy or been as well represented is in the ranks of you know, reporters who are bringing out the facts. And as Matt Continetti, my predecessor, says, calling people for comment and learning how to do the nuts and bolts of reporting, which I think is tremendously important and oftentimes has more of an impact on events than does, you know, the cable news, talk radio opinion stuff.
I saw you doing a point-counterpoint on CBS where you argued against impeachment, citing many of the same things that the Republicans in the House debate did. But with one big exception to my ear, you said it was wrong of the president to pressure his Ukrainian counterpart to announce an investigation into a political opponent. And most Republicans aren't accepting the premise that he did even that. So what do you say to people, Democrats, who argue that those actions that you state as facts are the impeachable offenses that deserve removal from office?
You know, I think that there's room for disagreement on it. You know, my personal view is that while you don't need, the president doesn't need to have committed a crime to be impeached from office, it certainly helps to make the case. If you look at the poll numbers on this, they haven't moved, which suggests to me that the Democrats haven't made a particularly compelling case in the House. And the other point that I made in that is that It's pretty clear that the Democrats have rushed their investigation in terms of calling witnesses to fit a political calendar because they didn't want it to interfere with their primaries, which is something that I understand. But it prevented them from having the constitutional battle with the president. The president said he's not going to provide witnesses for this. But, you know, just because Congress demands the witnesses, it's not incumbent on the president to provide them. The judicial branch, the third branch of our government, should mediate those disputes. And the Congress essentially said they don't have time for that. Those take a long time. And yes, it does allow the president to draw this out. But I think if the Democrats were more serious about the inquiry and less worried about the political calendar, they would have gone to the courts with this.
But those are all process arguments that you certainly can make. But many Democrats would say that just what you acknowledge the president did should be impeachable, because just as John Bolton was quoted likening it to a drug deal, it's the behavior of a strongman-style head of state, not the president of the country that is supposed to be the free beacon, if you will, the beacon of freedom, to be the world's model for clean foreign policy, devoid of that kind of self-dealing. If you are acknowledging that outside of process, you know, issues, that the president did pressure his Ukrainian counterpart, and it was for an investigation into a domestic political opponent, why isn't just that fact, knowing that fact, impeachable in your opinion?
My view is that the president pressured his Ukrainian political counterpart to announce an investigation, not actually to perform an investigation. I think it's unseemly. I simply don't think it's a high crime and misdemeanor. He didn't break a statute. It's interesting to me, the Democrats did not they didn't accuse in the articles of impeachment the president of committing a crime. I simply think things that are untoward or unseemly are not necessarily impeachable.
And one more push on this. Democrats say if the president is allowed to get away with that kind of abuse of power, as they describe it, even after everyone knows about it, then what stops him from continuing to transform foreign policy into a tool for his private interests rather than the national interest, because his lack of ethics in that regard will allow him to do whatever like that he can get away with?
Well, look, to a certain extent, I think foreign policy is always a tool for presidents' private political interests. That's why you heard President Obama say on an open mic, you know, he'll have more flexibility on things after the election. And I think
Putin, you're talking about that reference, right?
Exactly.
But that wasn't that different, because Obama was talking about what he thought would be in the national interest, some kind of reset with Russia, in his opinion. It wasn't because he personally would benefit from it.
But why didn't he want to talk about it before the election? It's because he thought it would be disadvantageous to him politically to bring that up before the election.
I see where you're going. And were you going to make another point there?
And I think it's simply it defies belief to think that presidents don't conduct foreign policy with a view to politics. These things are they're inextricably intertwined. And this president made it explicit. We normally don't see these transcripts, you know, so we don't know what previous presidents have been saying. But I think these things, domestic politics are always a part of foreign policy. And I think if the American people knew more about it, we'd probably object to much more of what we knew about that previous presidents were saying to foreign leaders.
And asking for a foreign country just in and of itself to get involved in our election in that way, not impeachable in your opinion?
I think it's wrong. I said it's, you know, and I said as much. I simply don't think it rises to the level of a high crime and misdemeanor that merits removal from office and overriding the election of the American people.
All right. Let's turn to the new twist of Speaker Pelosi withholding the articles of impeachment from the Senate for now. Liberal New York Times columnist David Leonhardt was our guest on impeachment here yesterday, Ileana, and seemed confused by Speaker Pelosi not sending the articles of impeachment right to the Senate. He wondered what leverage it gives her and if it makes her look too tactical. And now this morning, David Leonhardt's newsletter is simply titled, Send the Articles. So as a matter of political analysis, what do you think? Pelosi believes she's getting from this strategy, and are you surprised by how much pushback from more liberal media there is on this?
I am a little bit surprised because I do see a strategy in it, and it makes a fair amount of sense to me, having covered the president. Obviously, I can't read her mind, but what I see in it is, if she doesn't send the articles of impeachment to the Senate, it prevents the president from saying that he was exonerated. And if that does happen, if she does eventually send them over, I do think you will hear the president say over and over again that the Senate's exoneration showed that the impeachment was a scam. And I think that she's trying to withhold a talking point from him on the campaign trail. The second possibility is that she simply hasn't identified who she wants the impeachment managers to be, which is something that she needs to do before she sends them over to the Senate. So it simply could be that Pelosi isn't organized to send them over, but I think she's a tremendous political strategist and a highly organized person. So I think that's less likely than the fact that she's considering trying to withhold this talking point from the president.
Here's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell last night, seeming pretty amused by Speaker Pelosi's move.
I admit, I'm not sure what leverage there is in refraining from sending us something we do not want. But alas, if they can figure that out, they can explain it. Meanwhile, other House Democrats seem to be suggesting they'd prefer never to transmit the articles. Fine with me.
Fine with him. And it was that last point, the idea of never transmitting the articles, that it sounded like a minute ago that you were referring to when you talked about, you know, if this is a good tactic on Pelosi's part, maybe it's partly because then the president can't get acquitted by the Senate and say he was exonerated, but she can't withhold it forever. That wouldn't be politically acceptable, and not let the Senate do their trial, which presumably would wind up in acquittal, right? They can't just never send it over.
You know, she could not send it over before the election. It seems to me that's a possibility. I'm not sure that that's a good strategy, but it seems to me that that's what the thinking is.
Huh.
I think that's what the thinking is behind it. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's sort of what I if that's not the strategy, then I agree with David Leonhardt, whose column you read a couple of minutes ago. I don't know what the strategy is, because it seems pretty clear to me she's not going to strong arm Mitch McConnell into calling witnesses. He, of course, wants a very short trial. He will receive the articles and dismiss them very quickly, and the president will very quickly proceed to say that the Senate has cleared him and made clear that the way the House handled this was a scam, and the Democrats have been out to get him from the beginning. I think those are talking points you'll see him use on the campaign trail very frequently.
Interesting. I mean, you're much closer to it than I am, but my impression has been that what she really wants from withholding the articles is the witnesses, is to ratchet up public pressure, you know, on enough swing state senators that they feel they need to vote for rules that allow Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton to be called, rather than really intending to never refer the articles of impeachment, which is, talk about a process crime. That's going to look, I would think, that would look to a lot of people like no justice, an indictment without an opportunity for trial.
Well, that's a third possibility. So I think the three possibilities we have are, she's trying to pressure them to call the witnesses. She's trying to withhold the talking point from the president, and she hasn't yet identified the impeachment managers. Truly, I don't know which one of these is the case, but I think I think those are the three possibilities at work here when it comes to the strategy she's pursuing. I simply don't think the strategy of trying to pressure the Senate to call witnesses is going to work, so I have tended to discount that. I really don't think Mitch McConnell is going to be strong-armed into calling witnesses, because the most vulnerable senators in his caucus, you know, purple state Republicans up for re-election in 2020, do not want to linger on a Senate trial.
There was an ABC News poll this week that found that while the country remains about 50-50 on removal, 71% want the fact witnesses to testify, including 64% of Republicans. Maybe that much public opinion would put pressure on the purple state senators.
You know, having spoken to a few of them, you know, my sense is that they simply don't want to dwell on this, and they want impeachment done and over with. And I think that there's bipartisan sentiment on that the Democrats also don't want to dwell on this. And it's interesting that Chuck Schumer is pressuring McConnell to call these witnesses, because my feeling is that impeachment has taken a little bit of energy out of the Democratic primary, and the focus has been so much on impeachment that there just hasn't been as much public attention on the Democratic primary. And it has surprised me a bit that that Schumer seems keen to keep attention on impeachment rather than ceding to the senatorial candidates who are running for president.
And there does seem to be a split between what the members of the House are talking about or have been. Now the House part of it is ending, but the focus in Washington on impeachment, and of course the focus by the media, but the focus of Democrats in the House on impeachment and the focus of the presidential hopefuls on the trail. There's been reporting on this from the New York Times and other news organizations that they're not going out there talking about impeachment, regardless of what people are seeing on MSNBC or Fox or CNN day and night. They're going out and talking about healthcare and the economy, et cetera, indicating that they don't see a public appetite.
I think that's right. When you hear from the presidential candidates and you hear from vulnerable senators, they absolutely say the things that they're vulnerable on are healthcare, the things that voters care about are kitchen table issues. Whereas the media has absolutely saturation coverage with impeachment.
I am seeing a notification that says, Graham tells Giuliani to stand down. I presume that refers to Lindsey Graham. Is this a story you're familiar with yet?
Yes.
What can you tell us?
Look, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Rudy Giuliani, if the job of a lawyer is to protect the interests of the client, it's pretty clear that Rudy Giuliani is, you know, one of the worst lawyers in history. He simply has created more chaos and damage for his client than any publicly facing lawyer I can think of.
Tammy in Livingston, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with Eliana Johnson. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. Thank you so much for letting me come on. This is such a heartfelt topic for me. First, Eliana, I am so happy to hear a conservative-leaning voice expressed kindly and intelligently and without name calling. I consider myself a moderate, but certainly grew up in a Republican and evangelical household. So, Brian, thank you for having her on. She's wonderful.
Thank you.
I also wanted to just share, I'm anticipating some conversation around the Christianity Today editorial where the editor of that very evangelical, leading evangelical magazine said he recommends that he believes Trump should be removed from office. And just before you get into that, from a personal family standpoint, we have already been texting about that. My brother, who is so conservative and is so pro-life and afraid for the death of these unborn children, though, will not be moved by this. That editorial is huge and puts a finger on the division in the evangelical movement that is so visible and emotional in my own family. And some evangelicals may be moved, but those who really feel strongly about the pro-life movement and religious liberty will still continue to support Trump despite all the things they don't like about him. And I'm curious to see what your guests may have to say about that later.
Tammy, thank you so much. And let me just, to give our listeners enough background on this, this is the other story that we mentioned at the top. Christianity Today magazine has come out for impeachment, or for removal from office, I should say, because the president's coercion of Zelensky and harassment of Biden, they use the words coerce and harass, is immoral. They use the word immoral. And I see the president is pushing back this morning, saying Christianity Today has a lot of liberals. So any reaction to Tammy as kind of, you know, indicating a divide, a conflictedness that might be taking place within evangelical families or communities?
Absolutely. You know, I think from the outset, there's been a feeling of conflict because in 2015, 2016, you know, there was a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, obviously a man of questionable character who continues to use language that that many Christians find abhorrent. But evangelicals really have coalesced behind Trump and felt that he's been good on the issues they care about. It's interesting. I think Trump brought Mike Pence on the ticket in part to reassure evangelicals, but they've really become loyal to him personally, which has been one of the most surprising, I think, turns of the Trump presidency, and almost made him feel that he doesn't need Pence on his ticket because they're so unflailingly loyal to him personally.
Well, sorry for that abrupt ending, listeners, but during the live show, we actually lost our connection to the studio in D.C. that Eliana was speaking to us from right at that moment, just before our conversation was supposed to end. These things happen, but sorry about that. And some really interesting perspective there from Eliana Johnson, newly minted editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon. Thanks to Eliana for coming on. Earlier in this series, we took phone calls from listeners who proposed articles of impeachment. Now we're inviting calls from listeners who do not think Trump should be removed from office. We'll give you the phone number in a minute. Here's one that came in after the House voted to impeach last night.
My name is David Nywood from New Jersey. I do not believe that Trump should be removed from office simply because the Democrats have not done a sufficiently good job to take the Republicans' concerns and negate them. And that leaves this as unipartisan. Trump has done more than enough, and the Democrats need to make their case better so that this is a bipartisan issue.
If you are anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office after being impeached by the House, we're collecting those arguments now. Call in and tell us why. Leave your voicemail at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255 or 844-745-TALK. And maybe we'll use yours on the podcast. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.